Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
It's going down right here.
Huge save by England as we come out of the break. We're going to talk some football this hour, but we'll talk world football for a moment as England just had their bacon saved by the goalie right there. Still remains 1-0 England in the 48th minute. As they try to decide who gets to the semifinals there, the World Cup, but crazy. So, you know, the one thing I wanted to let everybody know, we're going to talk football for this hour, but tomorrow we're going to start our divisional previews, and we're going to kick it off with the AFC East. I have a couple of beat writers set up for tomorrow, Brian Costello, who covers the Jets for the New York Post, and then Ryan Talbot from the who covers the Buffalo Bills for Upstate NY at Bills Updates. We've had Ryan on here before. We certainly did something with him after the draft when they took Josh Allen. So we'll have a couple of beat writers. We'll go team by team in the divisions, and that's the way we're going to do it going forward. So every day that I'm here with Kevin, we'll do a division. He may do one with George next Saturday when I have a prior engagement. My daughter's birthday is this week, so we got a little party going on, and it's going to be difficult to both do a show and plan a party. So just being honest, it's the life of dad of young kids, got to plan a three-year-old's birthday party. So, but good stuff. And I'm covering for George next Sunday. I'll be with Corey Parson on Fantasy Football Frenzy. So... So football, since we're talking about the divisions and going division by division, you gave me some odds you found earlier this week of the team's chances to, it's to make the playoffs,
yes.
Right? I just want to make sure I have these odds right.
Yes.
So in the AFC, this is unbelievable. The AFC East. Well, I'm going to do it the way I read it to you the other day. The AFC North, the Steelers are a minus 550 to make the playoffs. The other teams in their division, the Ravens, are at plus 135, Bengals plus 400, Browns plus 600. So basically what that means is the Steelers are a prohibitive favorite to make the playoffs because they're going to win their division. That's just how Vegas feels about it, and I would agree. I think they'll... win that division. They should win it going away, barring any major injuries. We don't even know if Le'Veon Bell's going to be on the team yet, so we're including that as speculation. Maybe once he signs a deal or shows up at training camp, that thing might skyrocket to plus 800. But it's not even close to the Patriots' odds of making the playoffs, which is currently minus 1,500 because their division is a plus 450 on the Bills, plus 600 on the Jets, plus 600 on the Dolphins. So, yet again, I mean, it's not even – prohibitive is not even a hyperbolic enough word to describe their odds in potentially winning this division. And the AFC South, it's actually tight. Jaguars at minus 140, Texans at minus 135, Titans plus 165, Colts plus 325. So you said to me the other day, I'll pause here, because you said to me the other day that you hate the Texans' odds. You don't think they should be minus odds there.
No way. I don't see it. I think there's too much wrapped up into how good Deshaun Watson is. And listen, Deshaun Watson, what he did in, I believe it was four games, or maybe it could have been a couple more games, was MVP quality stuff. No doubt about it. They didn't win all of those games. So that means that for them to be, to justify this number of being favored to make the playoffs, right? By the way, these odds are, there are five teams in each conference that have minus odds, and then the sixth, what would be the final wild card spot, would be up for grabs. So for the Texans to be one of the teams that would be favored, that just feels like a little bit.
Seven games, to be fair.
Seven games. I don't know why I thought it was four. But it was
six
seven
and a
games.
Half, technically, but.
Yeah. So just is he really going to be at that level again? Can we guarantee that in year two, I guess, and perhaps with teams on a little more time to adjust from what they saw from that seven-game sample and coming off an ACL injury, the second time he's had an ACL injury in his football career, to play at that level? Then maybe it's not necessary. Maybe Tyrann Mathieu and J.J. Watt coming over onto the defensive side of the football is going to bring that defense back to maybe what it once was. But that's, again, another big pair of injury concerns there that I don't love, right? Because, like, when you're doing odds, you're looking for value plays, and I'm seeing no value in the in that Houston Texans play because I don't think that they're going to be making the playoffs, at least not as of today. I don't feel confident enough in that.
Yeah, and like you and I went over a little bit of the Pro Football Focus roster rankings.
Yes.
Which, you know, I could quarrel with a lot of this, but, you know, they're grading it according to Pro Football Focus's numbers, which I respect. And they had the Houston Texans as the second worst roster in the league, according to their grading system. Browns are actually at the worst. Which is also surprising, but at the same time, I'm with you. You're looking for value plays there, and I don't know that the Texans are that. The Titans are actually kind of interesting at plus money there.
Yeah,
to make the playoffs. As far as any of the AFC East teams, I think those are done. I do think the Bills take a step back this year, but at the same time, I don't necessarily think that they're building the organization the wrong way. I just don't necessarily think they're going to make the playoffs this year. Jets, Dolphins, obviously still rebuilding. I do think the Ravens are always interesting because they're always hanging around, well coached. They could squeak in at an 8-8 or a 9-7. But we'll keep going through the AFC West. Chargers are favored to win the division, according to Vegas, minus 145. Again, considered to be a very talented roster top to bottom. They lost some really funky games in the last couple of years. Their record may not belie exactly how good of a team they are. Chiefs are at plus 120, Raiders plus 165, Broncos plus 325. I think I said to you the other night, while it's a bit of a long shot, the Colts at plus 325, I'll be the first one to kind of trash the roster, and now it's been bad the last couple of years. But Andrew Luck really made up for a lot. The problem is now he's stepping back in when the division got better, frankly, in his absence. It's been a year and a half, but it has gotten better in his absence. The Jaguars obviously got a lot better, and the Titans improved. So he is technically coming back to play a better division than when last he threw a football in a real game. So, but plus 325 is an interesting enough number that could be a wacky division, and Bortles could crater and the whole thing. But they have protections against Bortles, the Jaguars do, but still. That would be a little bit of a long shot call for me. I think you said something about Denver, but I don't like that at all.
Well, I did. I do like the Broncos a little bit again. And as we're getting ready to do these division previews, I'll dive more into it and see if that is justified in what I find. I will tell you one mega long shot, the longest of shots that you could take within the AFC. I just feel like the Jets might end up being that second best team in the AFC East. And nobody is going to flirt with the idea of anybody winning that division other than the Patriots. But they were 5-11 last year, and nobody thought that they were going to sniff five wins. They ended up probably playing better than that 5-11 record. So if that defense, if some of those young guys can improve, their receiving corps is sneaky good. If Isaiah Crowell is okay, it comes down to can Sam Darnold come in, and if he gets that job, just win them some games. And get them to say an 8-8. Now, I'm not saying that I think that the Jets, they would need help from the rest of the conference to make it a low bar to get into the playoffs. But at plus 600, that would be a long shot that, again, I wouldn't throw in an absurd amount of money on it. I don't feel super great about it. But I would be interested in that play as the final spot to get into the AFC playoffs.
Not crazy. not crazy. Almost looking at, you know, we've seen other rookie quarterbacks spark some, you know, spark a little bit of a run, sort of like Deshaun Watson with Houston last year. I'm with you on the Deshaun Watson love. As much as I like him, I do think it's gotten a little bit out of control. But, you know, we're also talking a lot on here in terms of fantasy, and people just think there's numbers there to be had for him. So,
can I ask you one thing on the Patriots front?
Yeah.
Because you can explain this to people far better than I could. Because I'm sure that there are people who see these odds who, you know, have not, who are getting, maybe they're getting into betting or they're just not sure. And I know this from experience because I used to look at odds like this. And I see the Pats at minus 1,500. And I say to myself, okay, well, that makes sense. Because I can guarantee you right now that they're going to make the playoffs. Do you ever look at something like that and say, why not put down as crazy as it, and an extreme amount of money, despite that there were, you know, you are risking it.
But you have to have leverage to play. You have to have.
So yeah, explain that. Explain that.
It's like, so the only way you're going to take, and we talk about plus money, you just want to make, you're trying to, the negative money, the minuses here. So the Pats at minus 1,500, the Steelers at minus 550. That means you're putting up for the Pats. Obviously, this is gambling 101, but you're putting up $1,500 to win 100 on the Pats. That's just obviously not a good value bet. But if you're a guy that's a handicapper and you have leverage, which means you have a lot of available cash, you're okay to put a $30,000 bet up on the Pats because you're going to win some of your money back. What is that? Was it $2,000 if I'm doing the math right? I'm doing it right off the top of my head. So, 30,000. Yeah. So you're going to end up winning $2,000 on something like that, but that's not that, that's a fine bet for you to make, but it's like the guy that I think some guy put huge money on the UConn women to win the tournament this year. They didn't win. Crazy buzzer beater by Notre Dame. And that guy was out $30,000 or whatever it was he put on it. And it was to win. Their odds were way shorter than that. So that guy was not going to come out with a lot on the $30,000 bet. He might have won, I don't know, $500 or something like that. That's just bad money. Now, he figures he's going to win that 99% of the time. Well, 1% came up. So so we talk about plus money and value plays. We're just looking to not have to put a lot of money down in order to try and win some back. Doesn't mean we hit a huge windfall, but Kevin's talking about the Jets are a long shot. I'm talking about Indy as an interesting long shot. I'm just talking in terms of, say I put $100 down. You can even do it at 50 bucks. You know, yeah. I put $50 down on the Colts at the end of the year. I'm coming up. I'm going to win $167 or something like that. So, you know, that's the kind of $162 you win on that. So that's the kind of money I'm playing if I'm playing these types. I do the over-unders every year. I'll get into that a little closer to the season when I do some over-unders with some friends. We draft teams, and that's all in good fun. So to does that make sense? Did I describe it well enough?
No, absolutely. And I think that is something that, you know, as I've gotten into this more, I completely understand it. But I know when I first started looking at odds, it's like, why would I not just throw $40,000 on the bet? Not as if I had $40,000 or whatever, but like, take out a loan, just throw it down, and you're going to win. Like, it's a guarantee. But as you mentioned perfectly with that example of the UConn's women's team, it's like, if they don't, if Tom Brady gets hurt, if Bill Belichick retired midseason,
God forbid, one time Tom Brady got hurt, they didn't make the playoffs. They're the only 11-win team ever to miss the playoffs in NFL history, but they did not make the playoffs because he got hurt. And I'm sure that 11-5 team would have likely gone 13-3, and they would have won the division. It just was a funky year, and Matt Castle played fine, and the Pats played well, but 11-5 wasn't good enough that one year. So on the NFC side of things, we have, you know what, let's save the NFC for the other side of the break, because this will be interesting discussion. But to keep going on the AFC stuff, I don't really see it. The only other, the plus money play that I like there is probably the Titans.
Yeah,
I agree. 165.
I agree.
Because that will be a tight division in my mind. And I would like the Titans to make the playoffs before the Texans.
Yeah, I would too. I really was surprised by that.
Yeah, I don't know how this offense will look with Mike Vrabel overseeing the team now, but they clearly needed to make some changes. I think it's really apparent to everybody that Mariota needs to work out of play action more and not under center. The numbers were starkly contrasted last year when he was under center and when he was coming out, or when he was under center coming out and not running a play action as opposed to him running a play action. I thought it was very noticeable, and it should be noticeable to everybody that they needed to do a little bit more of that. I think that's why they made a change. The Mike Mularkey was a placeholder. They felt like Mariota had regressed under his tutelage, and he's an offensively minded coach, so they weren't going to give him another opportunity. It's too big of an investment, and it is a make or break year for guys like Jameis and Mariota. It doesn't mean that Mariota is going to get cut or that they're going to be done with him, but if he played badly, they'd really have to reconsider what they're doing with their starting quarterback position. And I guarantee you, Tampa is seriously reconsidering what they've done with their quarterback position over the last few years. The team that's come in last place five of the last 6 years, and Jameis got better year over year, but that's on the field. Off the field stuff, obviously, he's maybe even gotten worse. So we'll come back. We'll talk about the NFC odds on these teams, and we'll talk a little bit about a Jake Seeley article, Bold Predictions for the 2018 Fantasy Football Season. It's Mike and Kev on FST. We'll be back right after this.
Have you ever wanted to have a fantasy expert in the palm of your hand? Or better yet, in the pocket of your khakis? Well, check it out. Now you can. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Download it now to your phone, we promise. No weird viruses, no strange tracking things. Just 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of pure fantasy knowledge dropping all over your head. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Stop being a weirdo and streaming it online. Get it on your phone. Take it with you everywhere you go.
FST, England shoots wide, but they're up 2-0 now. Kevin, let me know the score if you saw it. Obviously, it's kind of hard to do watch both at the same time, but they're up 2-0 in the 66th minute right now.
It was Dele Alli.
They're looking pretty good. Oh, very nice. Tottenham.
And
so
Pickford, though, made a couple of massive saves right now, so he's the one getting all the buzz on social media for keeping this score 2-0.
Yeah, so, yeah, Sweden is not, they're not bowing down, certainly. They've gotten some shots on net from what I've been able to see during breaks and the like. So I'm going to read something to you, Kevin. I need you to focus because I want to see if you did a better job with me on this article. I'm going to read it in its entirety because it's not particularly long. This is from Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk. It's regarding the new catch rule, which includes more than a third step in reaching with the ball. The NFL's most recent effort to fix the catch rule included the crafting of an objective test for satisfying the all-important third element of the rule. Subjectivity, though not entirely eliminated, has been enhanced by objective examples of satisfying the requirement that the ball be possessed for a specific amount of time. The two examples cited by the league in passing the catch rule were taking a third step or reaching or extending the ball toward the line to gain. But the final rule identifies other concrete ways in which the player will be deemed to have possessed the ball long enough to complete a catch. They are, 1, tucking the ball away, 2, turning upfield, or 3, avoiding or warding off an opponent. The subject aspect of the catch rule remains, allowing the official to award a catch if the official simply believes that the player had the time to do something that he actually didn't attempt to do. With 5 specific, quote, acts common to the game, end quote, now listed in the rule as automatic devices for satisfying the time element, there isn't much else a pass catcher could do short of stand still or immediately fall down during whatever time is deemed to be necessary to have the ball long enough to complete the act of catching the ball. So, that's his explanation of the new catch rule rules. And I can tell you, it's still confusing.
I focused hard, and I think What I got from that is it seems like now it's going to be a lot more lenient. But boy, do I promise you, I'm not positive that that's what that meant. I mean, I don't understand.
Because it's funny because the picture that he uses in there is the catch that I'm going to think about. And it's the Zach Ertz touchdown in the Super Bowl, which I would agree 100 times out of 100 is a catch. But he didn't tuck the ball away. The ball did come loose when he hit the ground. Now, it was in the end zone. But why is it different in the end zone than it is in the other field of play? Like, there's always five questions that anybody could ask. And they wouldn't be wrong. You know, and the NFL wouldn't be wrong or right either. It's just there's a subjectivity to it that it's when we're talking about the soccer thing earlier, it's like, you know what? Just let the ref do it. Just let the ref do it. And I know the hard part is for us as fans that we should know. I've been watching football. I'm in my 40s. I've been watching football for most of that time. And right now, I don't know what it is. I can remember during the Super Bowl, because I was rooting for the Eagles, being like, please don't overturn this. But I could see it if they did, especially the Corey Clement touchdown. But the Ertz thing I thought would have been insane if they overturned it. But the Corey Clement thing, like I thought they might overturn that because I saw other times during the year where that wasn't a touchdown. Anyway, I just thought that was another example of how they're kind of screwing this all up. Comment if
the
you
NFL?
Like, I'm happy to let it sit.
Screwing something. What? I mean,
I know.
Look,
I know.
There were times when I was on the show with George last week where there was like four or five things we had laid out that just the NFL is just not handling correctly. And it's one of those things where.
What is one of them? I may not have heard that. Give me an example.
The holdout situation, the PED situation. As well, we were kind of talking about the big one was the Jameis Winston stuff. But we spoke about that more from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers aspect because, again, the way the NFL does things, getting into the debacle that is. Like, if you think the catch rule is complicated, try figuring out how they determine who gets suspended for how long.
I've said this from the beginning on the domestic violence policy. Every time somebody gets in trouble, It's a referendum on the policy and a negotiation, and I just don't understand it. I've heard explanations as to why it got reduced to three, but I'd be of the opinion that, hey, it's six games. That's the policy. Let's just do that and stop negotiating with every player who has a reason or there's some doubt. And Zeke is six, but Jameis is three, and this guy is four, and the other guy is two, and Josh Brown was one, and I know he's been blackballed from the league, but he was one, despite them being a long history of domestic violence against his ex-wife. So I don't understand that, and it's my biggest issue with that policy. So that could be another segment altogether, but yeah. I understand exactly what you mean on the DB stuff. And there are many other things. We should get into it in another show. We can just take apart some of the issues. And we'll talk about the PEDs thing because there's a new policy in place for players who get caught using PEDs. We're going to talk about that at the top of at the beginning of the next segment as we close out the show. But let's get to the NFC odds, which are... from the top, Eagles, -260. They are the shortest odds to make the playoffs, tied with the Vikings at -260. So both expected to win their divisions. Cowboys, +145, surprising. +325 for the Giants. Redskins, +375. If we go to the Packers, they're on the negative side. -170. Lions at +260. Bears at +450. See, so Vegas doesn't like it as much as some people have been saying. Yeah. They like the Bears, right?
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, as soon as I saw that, honestly, I thought about your whole thing. I was like, all right, well, I mean, at least Vegas sees what you've seen as well. And I think part of this, too, is, like I just kind of made it an argument, and not a strong one, but, like, maybe the Jets somewhat sneak in the AFC playoffs. There's no team like the Jets that would be able to get even close to the playoffs in the NFC like that. If you just, it is such... There's just so many good teams in the NFC. And that's why a team like the Eagles is -260 compared to the Steelers that are -550. And I think I mean, if we could, would we agree that the Eagles not only coming off the Super Bowl, but have a better roster than the Steelers? I just think like that's a stark difference.
The Steelers
are a far
superior team. Yeah, we'd agree with that. It's obviously it's because it's a far more competitive conference.
I think you could make an argument that their rosters are on par. Like the Steelers have a great talent, but their odds are drastically different.
Yeah, the only reason the Steelers and the Pats don't make the playoffs is if the quarterbacks get hurt.
Right.
That's it. That's what has to happen. So, you know, Vegas feels pretty good about those odds for the Steelers. So, Vegas loved the Chargers last year.
Mm.
It didn't work out because they lost some funky games. But that's why they're back in that position. So, keep going through. NFC South, Saints minus 130, Falcons plus 115, Panthers 130, Bucks plus 425. Go to the West to finish it out. Rams minus 170, Niners plus 135, Seahawks plus 220, Cardinals plus 800. I think I said to you in the text the other day. So the Cardinals are the longest odds in the NFL to make the playoffs. Yeah. I would not pick them as a playoff team. But it's a pretty interesting long shot for me because I don't think their roster is as bad as Vegas portends them to be. But the real problem here is their division because Vegas likes the Rams, obviously, and the Niners. So that is a tougher division. They're probably still not as good as the Seahawks on paper. But the Seahawks may also be getting rid of Earl Thomas if they can't work out this contract situation before the season starts. I said to you the other day, and I'll pass it to you right after say this, Atlanta is at plus money. I'll take that one.
Yeah, I don't disagree at all. I think that the more I look into Atlanta, it just seems like they have it really just comes down to, you know, how good Matt Ryan is. And Pro Football Focus, I've seen it just, you know, he seemed to be the unluckiest quarterback in the league last year. I was expecting a big drop-off coming into last season because – I mean, their offense was historic. Then they lost the mastermind behind the offense of Kyle Shanahan, so that was going to happen. So if they can find the balance, and they've made some improvements defensively and things of that nature. So, yeah, I think the Falcons definitely could even end up winning that South. As far as the other long shot.
I felt great about Atlanta against the Rams last year in that playoff game.
Mm.
And I thought that they were going to beat the Eagles.
Yuck.
And to the victors go the spoils. I don't like to do the, they should have beat them. But that was, I mean, they were right there, right? They had four shots at the end zone. Credit to the Eagles for defending it. But they had a jump ball to Julio, and it really could have happened there. And the Eagles wouldn't have got to play the Vikes. Again, it's not a should have thing. I'm just saying the Falcons were right there to beat the Eagles, who ended up winning it all.
As far as a couple of long shots that do interest me, and I say long shots relative to the odds, would be the Giants and the Redskins. I think that both teams are better than the Cowboys today. And just for the value of it, again, I don't know if I would peg either team to actually make the playoffs. I actually think that they did a really nice job with the teams that they have minus. I tend to agree. I do think that Atlanta would probably be that sixth team, and I maybe make an argument for them over the Saints. But I think the Redskins and the Giants, because I still think that I understand they lost Kirk Cousins, but Alex Smith was a better quarterback last year than what Kirk Cousins was.
Yes, in a different system. And
100%, but I'm just saying in terms of a drop-off, like plus 375 is – I mean, look at the rest of the odds here. They are pegged to be the 4th worst team in the entire NFC.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big drop off.
Only behind the Bears, Bucks, and Cardinals.
And I bet you that the Bucks would have better odds if Jameis wasn't suspended.
So if you pick the Giants or if you picked a second team out of the NFC East to make it, who would you pick first, the Giants or the Redskins?
Oh man, I think I'd probably lean towards the Giants because I still think there's defensive talent there. And I just think that they lost control so much under McAdoo. And Shermer was good last year. I mean, maybe a rookie going with a rookie head coach is tough, but I would probably lean towards the Giants.
Yeah.
And I think right now, so today, I would say they're second.
I would jump on the Falcons for, in general, in the NFC, I'm jumping on the Falcons at plus money, and I don't think it'll be plus money for long. I think it comes down.
And the NFC is wild.
As we get a little closer to the season. Yeah, so I think it comes down as we get a little closer to the season. So that's it for now. We'll continue to talk about this kind of stuff because these odds will change, obviously. We're just out of the July 4th holiday. And by the way, I didn't wish everybody a happy July 4th. I know we did it last week. I hope you enjoyed, everybody out there enjoyed their holiday. And for our Canadian listeners, Canada Day, which was last July 1st. So I hope you all got a chance to enjoy some barbecue and fireworks and all that stuff. I know I did. So let me go move over to another article that you can find in our exclusive Edge draft package, NFL exclusive Edge draft package. I'm going to focus on one article in each show, and this one is a favorite of the writers, Jake Seeley. I know I've talked to him about this before, but he likes doing this article. He does a bold fantasy, bold prediction, one surprise from every team. So I'm going to jump around a little bit, but so let me start with Atlanta since we were just focused on them. This is Jake Seeley. You can find him on Twitter at AllInKid. And again, please go to rotoexperts.com. Find the exclusive Edge package for the NFL. A lot of great content in there. This is one of those articles. So Atlanta Falcons, he says Matt Ryan is a QB1. Calling my bluff, everyone knew that the Falcons and Ryan couldn't repeat the absurd touchdown efficiency from 2016, but no one expected that severe of a drop-off. Even with that decline, which already points to the regression turning back positively for 2018, he only missed QB1 status by 22 points last year. He posted just the ninth season in NFL history of 4,000-plus passing yards and 20 or fewer touchdowns. So that is a that is certainly out of bounds of normal statistical leanings. And if you like fun things, since Ryan's breakout in 2010, he's finished inside the top 10 in every even-numbered year. And it's 2018, folks. So he's having a little bit of fun with that. He thinks Matt Ryan is a QB one.
Yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily have a ranking up within my head, but I certainly can see it. I mean, the weapons are there, right? Like the Freeman-Coleman duo in the backfield are both terrific in the passing game. Julio Jones is one of the five best receivers in all of football. They had Calvin Ridley, Mohamed Sanu. Again, I don't see really what would hold Matt Ryan back from being a QB1 would be if he really was that reliant on Kyle Shanahan. And we saw him have some success before Kyle Shanahan. Again, not to that extent. But I think one of the big things here that he laid out is how close he was to QB1 status last year. And if he was that close, and if he should be able to get back to closer numbers, somewhere in the middle of what he was last year and the year before that, then he should be able to crack it.
Yeah, ADPs right now, Matt Ryan is going 14th. So here's what I would say. He's going right behind Roethlisberger is at 11. Roethlisberger, Luck, and Goff are 11, 12, 13. Then you got Matt Ryan. Right behind him, Phil Rivers, Pat Mahomes, Dak Prescott. In a 12-team league, and a lot of your home leagues, people are going to draft two QBs, which they don't need to do. So just be mindful of that. But look at how long you can wait on Matt Ryan at 14. Say if it goes according to plan. You can wait a long time to get somebody like that. That I'm with Jake. This is a QB1. I think there is some positive impact to them being, frankly, less unlucky. And I think you do want him to be a guy that you can target, and you can target him late because so many experts have got it into everybody's head. You can just wait on quarterback, but you can think about how late you'd be able to get Matt Ryan. So I do like him as a bold prediction. I'm with Jake on that one. We'll do one more quick one before the break. Cincinnati Bengals finished last in the AFC North. Not much to work with here. Joe Mixon, top 15 RB. Even if I said he reaches RB1 status, it's still not that bold. John Ross breaks out, reaches the top 50, not bold. Top 30, I'm not going that far. These may be bold, but they have to be attainable. Looking over the Bengals roster, there's a scattering of talent and plenty of areas lacking, including quarterback with Andy Dalton. The Browns are much improved, and the Ravens have slightly better depth. The Bengals are going nowhere. I was crushing the Bengals last year. Do you think the Bengals come in last this year and the Browns beat them out?
No. I still think the Browns are the worst. I just think that their defense is still atrocious. I like what they did offensively. Their defense is still atrocious, and I think the Bengals have enough in place to stay better than the Browns.
Okay, we'll come back. We'll talk a little bit more about that and the PED situation that Kevin brought up. It's Mike and Kevin closing it out on FST on Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Did you know that you can listen to this show live on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network? Listen on the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn Radio app, or download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network is the only totally free 24/7, 365 Fantasy Sports Network of its kind without a subscription. Check out YouTube Live on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page and participate in the programming there, where you can ask questions, discuss the topics with other fantasy enthusiasts, or tell everyone that you disagree. Call into your favorite show and ask your question. The number is 844-84-FNTSY. That's 844-843-6879. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network, your free fantasy source 24 hours a day.
FST. Going up to the top of the hour here, so a final segment, and we're going to be talking to, or we're going to be passing it over to In This League with Bogman and the Welsh, and then George Kurtz and Joe Galina from 3 to 6 on the Weekend Fantasy Update. As I said, tomorrow, Kevin and I are right back here from 9 to 12, and we'll have Ryan Talbot lined up. He's going to talk to us about the Bills, Brian Costello talking to us about the Jets, and we'll preview the AFC East, despite its odds being overwhelmingly in the Jets' favor. We want to get a sense of what kind of players we're going to be looking at on these rosters. Who sees the most targets in Buffalo? Does LeSean McCoy have a setback because they've lost three offensive linemen? Those are the types of things I'll be asking of Ryan Talbot. And on the Jets' side of things, how early does Darnold grab the job? What does this running back committee and wide receiver committee look like? Frankly, I think there's a lot of questions to be answered on the Jets. Robbie Anderson was a guy that came out of nowhere at the end of the year 2 years ago and ended up being a big asset last year. But 2 years ago, Quincy Enunwa was a big asset. So there was a lot of interesting things that happened on a Jets roster that ended up becoming fantasy relevant on a team that people just bashed constantly. You know what I mean? But Josh McCown ended up being an asset in two QB leagues last year and in super flex leagues until he got hurt. So those are the types of questions you have to keep diving deep. You tend to become homers to the teams that put up a lot of points, but there's value to be extracted everywhere across fantasy football. So that's why we like to talk to as many of these guys as we can. And we'll continue the divisional previews all throughout the month. So, any event, Kev, you had a story on NFL's PED policy. Explain that.
Yeah, I mean, the meat and potatoes of this whole story is the NFL is now put out a new policy surrounding PEDs, and I wonder if perhaps they're concerned that this is going to become a growing problem within their sport, where they're going to offer up to a 50% reduction on the suspension that you would get for your PED policy if you will snitch on other players who have violated the PED policy. One of the all-time stupid things I've ever seen come from the NFL. And as we just mentioned, they've been making this a regular habit. To suggest that in this sport... Go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
To suggest that in this
I'll
sport...
I'll comment after you're done.
A sport that is this violent, and where I think that the people within those locker rooms and those players have to have at least a strong enough bond to go out there and put this on the line the way that they do, to suggest that they would go and throw others under the bus to rid themselves of their own suspension. The fact that a player would think that that is what would be best for them. How would a team receive it if a backup left tackle threw the starting left tackle under the bus, and he now got 50% less games for a PED suspension. How would the team view such a move? It is ludicrous. To be fair,
it is ludicrous. And it's almost silly that it's in there. But it's one of those provisions that's within a policy, and we'll just have dust collect on it for now until the end of time. Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk happened to be reviewing it, and he said that the NFL, it says within the PED policy, he's reviewing it in connection with the Julian Edelman suspension. Quote, the NFL Management Council may, prior to the conclusion of a player's appeal, reduce the length of the suspension and corresponding bonus forfeiture by up to 50% when the player has provided full and complete assistance, including hearing testimony if required, to the Management Council, which results in the finding of an additional violation of the policy by another player, coach, trainer, or other person subject to this policy. So it does very much, in black and white, reward players for snitching, for lack of a better term, on other players, coaches, trainers. As he says here, he doubts that it's ever happened. I certainly don't think it ever will. It is crazy that it's in there, but I think it's one of those provisions where a lawyer suggested it or a owner suggested it, and the lawyer said, fine, we can put it in there, but what if it ever gets out? Is it going to be a bad look? And sure enough, it got out, and it's a bad look. But I don't know how long it's been there. It may have been there in there forever. So it is silly, but the good news is I don't think the situation that you talked about, I mean, that player could never play in a locker room again.
No. And
he'd if never be allowed in a locker room again.
Let me say this, right, because some people may hear this and say, a little bit of a reaction because of what you just laid out there. This isn't going to actually, or it would be very surprising for this to be a provision that ends up coming to fruition, that actually ends up being used. The reason why something like this, or something like the NFL not allowing that Chiefs player to put MD, who is a doctor, on the back of his uniform, the reason why those become stories or become a little more frustrating than it sounds like it needs to be is because it is added on top of a pile that is already so big that the NFL, it just seems like at every turn they are getting things wrong. And maybe the wrong is going...
I was texting with a buddy of mine the other day, sure, to your point. Sorry to interrupt. But I was texting with a buddy of mine the other day, and he's a diehard Pats fan, super Tom Brady guy, the whole thing. Like, just, you know, central casting for the guy that loves Tom Brady. He doesn't have a thick Massachusetts accent or anything, but he loves Brady. And he was just saying when Brady retires, he thinks he's going to step away from the NFL for a while. He said it's just gotten so silly and ridiculous. It's not because of any weird political thing. In fact, he's generally a progressive kind of guy. But he's just tired of the nonsense. And I know I have other friends that are like that too, that they're not down on the players for kneeling. They're down that it's a thing. They're just tuning in to watch football. And there's always a story like this. And like, there's more talk surrounding the NFL this offseason about suspensions and anthem protests that aren't even that widespread than there is about anything else, when it should be who is the hot rookies, or like the NBA offseason dominates. You know, who's switching to what teams and how much is it going to matter and does it shift the balance of power? That should be the discussions, not Jameis Winston and Ubers and all that kind of stuff. They find a way to step in it. It's tough when you're at the top of the heap. People are just always going to take shots, and there's people that make a living. I don't consider myself to be one of them, of taking shots at leagues all the time and creating an extremely negative narrative regarding leagues, players, teams. I try not to do that. I just frankly lay out my opinions on the matter, but I try not to go overboard with creating negative narratives. I think I've seen a lot of sports writers and sports journalists do that over time, and that doesn't appeal to me. I wouldn't say that I don't often come across it when I'm down on a player, or a thing, but I'm just trying to be authentic about it. But I try to have fun with all of it more than anything else. I don't want it to be, doesn't have to be sunshine and rainbows, but to just constantly hammer away at the negative things about a sport or sports in general, I always eschewed that from other sports broadcasters and journalists and the like. So I'll get off my soapbox and get back to what we were talking about with bold predictions. Does that all make sense, though, Kev?
No, absolutely. And if I could just if I could just quickly say, I think one of the things with stuff like this is, and it can be adjacent to the Warrior stuff, right? Like, I can send out a tweet in all caps that says, tell me how this is good for the league, but I know that I'm the first person that is going to run home to watch the 10:30 Kings-Hawks game in January. And I know that I'm going to watch every fourth quarter minute of Warriors-Raptors, with the Warriors up 30 in the finals. Like, I know that. But if these things pile on, and as these NFL problems become more frustrating, it can get to a point, though, where even some of the diehard fans would start to tune out. And if diehard fans are having a conversation about it, if people who make a living out of watching it, if they're going to at least entertain the idea of, man, this could get to a point where people are tuning out, then people are tuning out. Now, this is not this whole big, the NFL's done, nobody's watching the NFL, the ratings are down. Listen, the NFL is still kicking everyone's butt. They run the TV game. That's what they are. But as these problems continue, it's just not a good look, and they're avoidable. And I think that's why it's frustrating more than anything. It's frustrating.
Yeah, no, they have a PR issue. I don't think there's any doubt. They're a monstrous organization, revenue-wise and ratings-wise, but they still have a PR issue, and they get attacked. They're attacking themselves, and they get attacked from different angles as well. So let me get the train back on the tracks for these last few minutes, because there's an interesting one here of Jake Seeley's bold predictions. Again, you can find these on rotoexperts.com in the exclusive Edge package. We were talking about the Packers earlier. One thing I would mention, and piece of news from the NFL that I should have reported earlier, I'll be better about going through straight news tomorrow. We've gone off of some tangents today, which are okay, but Aaron Jones was suspended. Their running back, Jones, suspended for 2 games for violating the PED policy. So people have tried to speculate what the story is between Ty Montgomery and Aaron Jones and Jamal Williams. I would think, for at least in the short term, Aaron Jones gets put on the back burner. Maybe that helps Jamal Williams. Does it continue? Is there a doghouse situation? We've talked about this before with Mark Ingram and Julian Edelman. I know this is a lesser scale, but does it provide a little bit more clarity? I'd be interested, as we get to the NFC North in our divisional previews, that will be a question that I'll have for one of our experts that we bring on regarding the Packers. Does it provide any clarity at all for so England wins 2-0, by the way, in the World Cup. Does it provide any clarity for the Packers running back situation? We shall see. But on the Packers front, Jake's bold prediction, not only did the Packers release Jordy Nelson, and the bold prediction, by the way, is Randall Cobb is back as a wide receiver too. Not only did the Packers release Jordy Nelson, they replaced him by drafting 3 receivers and signing Jimmy Graham. They obviously expect one of those to hit, Geronimo Allison to step up, or even Ty Montgomery to move back to receiver at times. But no matter what, Cobb is back to being the number two in Aaron Rodgers' offense. Back in 2015, while James Jones was still around stealing touchdowns, Cobb was a wide receiver 26 in PPR leagues, and it looks as though wide receiver 2 isn't even that bold when you think about it. Last year, with Jordy Nelson there, he had 92 targets, 66 catches. Nelson had 88 targets and 53 catches in his 15 games. I've always been a Randall Cobb fan, to the point where I've burned myself over drafting him at times. But I do like this bold prediction as well. I'll get to one that I don't like, but I do like Randall Cobb to be back in a position to be a legitimate fantasy contributor. He has 66 catches, 653 yards, 4 touchdowns. You start to push those numbers up by 10-15%, and you have a serious fantasy contributor on your hands.
Equanimeous St. Brown, Notre Dame great, wide receiver 2. I raise that bold and go bolder. I'm kidding. I have no idea if Equanimeous St. Brown will even see snaps.
Catch a ball.
I do like this Randall Cobb prediction, though. I think that, it can't just be for years, right, when we were drafting, players within the Aaron Rodgers offense, that we were able to draft all of these guys at the top for elite production, And now that there are some changes, it's only Davante Adams, right? Like, there's going to be production to be had. Now, maybe one of these wide receivers does surprise us. Maybe Equanimeous St. Brown ends up being the greatest wide receiver of all time. We can't rule it out. He's from Notre Dame. But there's definitely going to be value to be had there. And I don't see why it wouldn't be, or why it couldn't be Randall Cobb.
Yeah, so his 66 catches last year, let me do them quick. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19. He was top 20 in receptions last year. If he upticks that by, you know, throw 15% on there, so another, let's call it 9 catches, that's in the 75 range. That puts him in the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. So he would have been 11th or 12th in the league last year in receptions with that uptick. I'm making sort of sweeping judgments right now, but I do think it's okay to have Randall Cobb be a target right now, and I'm going to try and find where he is at his ADP. By the way, they did draft 3 wide receivers. They were later in the draft. It was Jamon Moore, Marquez Valdez-Scantling, and Equanimeous St. Brown, as Kevin mentioned earlier. So they were a little bit later in the draft, but they're trying to get depth beyond Jordy Nelson, and Davante Adams is the man there out now, obviously. But Randall Cobb, he's a veteran player. He's only 27, but he'll be 28 this year, and they obviously are looking for some depth long-term.
And while
the Packers are very big on developing their own players and not going out into free agency to acquire them.
And while you pull up where his ADP is, as much as I'm talking about Jimmy Graham being the guy that's going to get all the touchdowns.
41. We 41st wide receiver, Randall Cobb.
I mean, you can't rule out Randall Cobb getting a big touchdown uptick. Jordy Nelson was his guy. And there's going – and Rodgers can still be a guy that might like to go to someone that he is at least has enough of a rapport with in Randall Cobb. Not to say that he doesn't have one with Adams, but maybe him and Jimmy Graham don't hit the ground running. And Randall Cobb sees some of those red zone targets. So I think that this is a really nice play here by Jake. I think it's certainly feasible. Certainly.
Back in 2014, when he made the Pro Bowl, he had 12 touchdowns. Back in 2012, his second season, he had 8. Outside of that, it's 4, 6, 4, and 4. He has not historically been a primary red zone target. But I've always liked his playmaking ability. Back in 2014, we're going back now. That's be 4 seasons ago. He was 91 for 12, 87, and 12 touchdowns. That was a huge year. So I'm not suggesting that's what it's going to be, but I do think that you have some possibilities there for Randall Cobb. Let me give you one more as we're getting.
What's the
out
one you don't like?
Dante Moncrief for the Jaguars is a top 25 receiver. His process is scanning the roster. Moncrief actually has the best potential to become a number one of sorts. Marquise Lee, nice middle of the field receiver, but lacks true outside and red zone skill. So he likes that. I'm going to say no on Dante Moncrief having that big of a bump.
As well,
we could talk about this article more tomorrow. Kevin and I will be back from 9 to 12, and we're going to be doing the AFC East.
Woo!
Like I said, Brian Talbot, Brian Costello. Be good stuff.
Big show.
Thank you for Sean Engel to producing. On behalf of Kevin Walsh, I'm Mike Blewett. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Enjoy In This League next.